This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling. Recently, a close friend of mine experienced an unexpected loss. Watching their family struggle emotionally and financially made me stop and think seriously about my own family's future. As the primary provider, I know how important it is to make sure that if anything ever happened to me, my family would still be able to manage. So I realized that without life insurance, my family would be left with overwhelming financial burdens. I looked into coverage before, but the process always felt complicated, got endless forms, phone calls, and medical exams, made everything take weeks. So that's why Ethos stood out to me. Their process is simple and 100% online. There's no medical exam required, just a few health questions, and you get a quote in as little as 10 minutes. In many cases, you can even receive same-day coverage without ever leaving your house. Ethos offers up to $3 million in coverage, with some policies starting as low as $2 a day, billed monthly. It's a trustworthy company that's changing the way people think about life insurance. So protect your family's financial future with life insurance from Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/Brian. That's ethos.com/Brian. Application times may vary. Rates may vary.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot coming on going into Christmas Day. There's so much action. Griff Jenkins at the bottom of the hour, and Brett Baer is standing by. Meanwhile, today there's going to be action from Mar-a-Lago. There's going to be an announcement with the Secretary of War. I'm not sure what it is. And the Secretary of Navy. That should be interesting. Maybe it's about massive shipbuilding. I hope we definitely need it. We're losing ships instead of gaining them. We're under 300 now. And we're following a lot of moving stories. Before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Inflation was 3.7% when we took office. Now it's 1.4%. But inflation has dropped precipitously under President Trump. So I'm not sure that there's a story to explain with tariffs.
Kevin Hassett, the economy will make or break the Republicans. We're going to talk about the chances of you feeling the relief you seek and the plan Trump has to make success happen.
Number two.
We obliterated their nuclear facilities, but we did not obliterate their desire to have a bomb. Have they tried to open up in Richmond and other areas? I think they may have. Are they trying to rebuild their ballistic missile force to overwhelm the Iron Dome? I believe they are.
The conflicts facing Trump versus Iran, Venezuela, Russia, Ukraine, grinding peace deal that's ongoing. How Trump plans on taking action on all of these.
Number one.
We're going to ensure that President Trump has Congress for all 4 years. We are going to get my husband's friend, J.D. Vance, elected for 48 in the most resounding way possible.
There you go. That is Erica Kirk, Turning Point Fest. Turning Point America Fest, in many ways, a preview of 26 and 28 elections. We're going to bring you the latest from the next generation of Republicans and the divide on the right and the left. Meanwhile, Erica Kirk basically said, I'm endorsing J.D. You know who didn't? Lindsey Graham says, I'm still on the fence. Ted Cruz, not really. And Rand Paul, definitely not. With me right now is Brett Baer. Brett, welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brett Baer's book has now spent its ninth week on the New York Times bestseller list, and it is called To Rescue the Republic, Teddy Roosevelt, and the Birth of a Superpower. And I want to get to that shortly. By the way, a special's on Fox Nation. But, Brett, you thought, and you just told me on television, the Nicki Minaj thing was more than celebrity power. Why do you think it was more than just a celebrity who seems to support and said, I support Donald Trump and J.D. Vance?
Well, first of all, you don't see a lot of celebrities coming that way. And you don't see I think she talked about it really authentically and what concerned her about what she was seeing and why she felt it was important to speak out. And, you know, I think that carries a lot of weight, especially with young people in today's day and age. She has a big following, mm-hmm. obviously. And
it's an urban following.
Maybe move the needle, you know, in different places that Republicans and conservatives hadn't been.
Here she is talking about J.D. Vance and Trump. Cut 11.
This administration is full of people with heart and soul. And they make me proud of them. Our vice president, he makes me Well, I love both of them, but they're both powerful men, smart, strong, all of that.
So, I mean, that's pretty sincere. It's not like, hey, I agree with him on Nigeria. She was really explicit in saying I support both these guys.
Yeah, she was. And, you know, listen, you said who's not endorsing. I think part of that is because, you know, they're going to play the game where President Trump's going to say, should I run in 28? And they don't want to be out endorsing before, you know, he officially says he's not running. But I can tell you that the whole 28 thing, I believe, is about making the left's heads explode, and that he doesn't really have any intention to do it. I think at this point he probably believes that a J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio ticket out of the gate would be the best scenario. But it's so early. But I think that's why the non-endorsement from other people.
Yeah, I thought J.D. Vance was pretty direct in saying, you know, we're not, we haven't turned things around yet, but you remember, you don't want to go back to what we were doing. Cut one.
Now, the Democrats are always already talking about 2028. And it looks like they're going to nominate a California liberal who's presided. A California liberal who's presided over rolling blackouts, open borders, and unchecked violent gangs. They're just trying to settle on whether it's going to be Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris.
Yep, Gavin Newsom in the latest poll has got 11% of the following, Kamala Harris 5, AOC 4. So he is the front runner for now. Your thoughts?
Yeah, again, you got a long way to go. I think Josh Shapiro in Pennsylvania, you've got a lot of folks who are going to get into that race. It'll be a cast of thousands before the end. And I do think while Gavin Newsom is smooth and can speak very well and presents well, you know, the bumper sticker is tough. I want to make America California. It's just not it doesn't really sell that well.
I know. You know what's so interesting is the person that picked up on that was Charlemagne the God. He was on ABC over the weekend, Cut 18.
It is about how you campaign, but it's more so about how you govern.
Yeah.
So I think that what people are going to be looking at are people's actual records, right? Like, literally. So even if you are able to cut through, like a Gavin Newsom is cutting through, people are going to really look at his record because they've seen, you know, what he's done in California. And I think things like people's records are actually going to come back to haunt them, you know, when they decide to run for president.
I mean, he's being kind. I mean, the high taxes, yeah. The exodus from the state, the huge homelessness. He was funding all illegal immigrants and took great pride in it. And they're $30 billion in debt. You know, the rolling blackouts, as we mentioned before. And the fact is he's still trying to destroy his oil and gas industry, which means gas is between $5 and $6, where you and I, where I am anyway, I'm looking at, on the average, $2.70 a gallon.
Yeah.
So that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, and listen, that record matters, and when you're going up against another record, it's going to be, you know, you're not running against Donald Trump probably in 28, almost positively, and I think you're going to be, it'll be about records, and I think, you know, Democrats are going to find that they're going to go around the country and see how they can get a candidate that stands up, but the battle inside the Democratic Party is and still has been the Democratic Socialists versus the more moderate candidates.
So let's talk about To Rescue the Republic. It's now spent its ninth week on the bestseller list, over 115,000 copies sold. So this got to be a good feeling that Teddy Roosevelt, one of the most iconic figures in the country, people love your perspective on it.
It is heartening. I think it's, you know this better than anybody, that it's fun to write about history and see history kind of come to life in the reading of the book and, you know, getting it to being a success. I think people like looking back, especially because it's real life stories, but they're just rich anecdotes that a lot of people just didn't know about our history and about that president. He is full of a lot of different chapters of his life that are just interesting to read. And it's not like you're reading a school book. It's like, you know, it's almost a novel that you can read over the weekend at the beach.
You know, what's interesting is he's going to get a lot of publicity this year because you got the Secretary of Interior, the former governor of North Dakota, Doug Burgum, is going to be, thanks to his prodigious fundraising, is now going to open up a brand new library, Teddy Roosevelt Library in North Dakota. And that's getting a lot of publicity, too, because the statue that they took out of Museum of Natural History is gone because they don't like that an American Indian was standing there with an African-American person. Ridiculous stance. It's now going to be in North Dakota. And the president will be out there to open it up July 4th. So there, you know, there's a lot of interest in Teddy Roosevelt now.
There is. There's a ton of it. And I think that library will be really, really interesting. It'll be fascinating to see it. I think the plans, I've seen the plans, they look really great. And, you know, North Dakota is going to have pride in having a presidential library. And you're right. Doug Burgum as governor and now Interior Secretary is really the one who got it on the map.
Right. And to think that the thing that struck me about Teddy Roosevelt, everything that he did, and he didn't live to be 60. I mean, can you imagine? He was queuing up to run for re-election, right? After losing with
the... leading candidate.
Yeah.
He was the leading candidate as he died.
And to think that he dies of maybe residual from his trek through the Amazon, nobody's sure, but he didn't feel good, went to bed. And if you go to Sagamore Hill right now on Long Island, you could see the very bed that he died in that night, just never woke up. And his wife outlived him by about 30 years.
Yeah, she was a powerhouse. And, you know, Sagamore Hill, that's just worth going to if you can, because it's caught in exactly the same time. Like, they haven't, they've only, like, improved it to exactly as he had it. And it's just a capsule in time.
And in case you don't know it, he liked to shoot animals, and he mounted their heads. We don't do that as much now. But there are a lot of elephants, tigers, antelope adorning the living room.
I know. It's awesome. It's really, really cool. And he's just such a character in each part of his life that it's fun to read.
And also, what I also think is good about it, Brett, is, you know, he made the president something really cool. The president was an executive, right? Kind of low-key. He made it cool. Be proud of America. You know, let's build up this military. Let's tell everyone, get the heck out of our hemisphere as originally intended. You know, he would be all for, in my humble opinion, this Venezuelan operation led by Trump.
Big time. Big time. Because he was about, you know, the force showing the power of the U.S. military to have an effect, much like Reagan in Peace Through Strength. That's what he believed. And using the fleet in that way, I think he would have been for it.
All right, Brett Baer, his book is now in a ninth week. So let's make it 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, To Rescue the American Spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the Birth of a Superpower. Check out the special on Fox Nation to find out what you're going to be getting. What a great Christmas gift to get. You can still get some in person and make your way out to Barnes & Noble. Thanks so much for joining us, Brett. Congratulations.
All right. Merry Christmas. See you, buddy.
Back at you. 1-866-408-7669. I got a lot more to discuss, including an operation in Iran. Why I hope the Israelis get permission from Trump in Mar-a-Lago to take another shot. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
With the holidays coming, that means more gift buying and more deliveries to the front door. It made me think about how I should upgrade my security to keep away the porch pirates and keep my delivery safe. I went with SimpliSafe because it's proactive. Traditional systems react after a break-in. SimpliSafe can help stop a crime before it starts. That's because SimpliSafe keeps your home safe with a double layer of defense. First, You got cameras detecting potential threats. And then live agents confront them while they're still on the outside of your home before they have a chance to do any damage, telling them they're on camera and telling them the police will be dispatched if they do not leave. That's right, if they don't leave. That's why I trust SimpliSafe at my place to help protect my family, keep an eye on the dogs, and watch those deliveries, because real security stops crime before it starts. Right now is such a good time to get SimpliSafe. This month only, get 50% off any new system. Go to simplisafe.com/Brian. Again, that's simplisafe.com/Brian. There's no safe like SimpliSafe.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If you're an American and you want Maduro to stay in power, man, have you lost your way. President Trump promised to secure our nation from the scourge of narco drug trafficking. The kingpin in our backyard is Maduro in Venezuela. They're poisoning America. They're aligned with Hezbollah. Iran vowed to come to their aid just yesterday.
So that is right. All the evil regimes of China, Russia, Iran, terror groups like Hezbollah have a foothold in Central America because Venezuela let them run wild. So that's why we intercepted it. We just intercepted a third tanker. This is one of those a member of those ghost fleets, according to the Wall Street Journal. And the Coast Guard is the one who goes on the deck of the oil tankers and just takes these over, and we take it out. They lose about $80 million every time we grab a tanker. And guess who gets out? Guess who loses out? China, and specifically Cuba. Here's more from Lindsey Graham. Cut 23.
I applaud President Trump of trying to bring down this narco-terrorist state in Venezuela run by Maduro. They're bad news. They did seize our assets in 1976. They are flooding our country with cocaine. They're aligned with international terrorist organizations. I support the idea of standing up to Maduro, and I want him to go. I am all in the camp for regime change, and I'd like to see the people of Venezuela be able to elect a new leader that would not only be good for them, but good for the region and good for the United States.
Senator, with a couple
seconds. So stay tuned. Maduro's days are numbered.
And that is true, but I do think when time is not on our side. We don't want to keep our assets there. Every day he's able to stay in power makes him look strong and makes maybe people thinking about overthrowing him reluctant. And now he's being guarded by Cuban special forces guys. But if you could find a way to penetrate them, let them know things are only going to get worse, and let them know that you're going to be held as responsible as he is unless you turn and come to the side of freedom and let the party that won the last election run the country. Here's Congressman Mike McCall talked about this with me on One Nation last night at 10, cut 27.
America first doesn't mean America last abroad, or America alone for that matter. And I think you point out the victories that President Trump has had when he does policies abroad that bring victories at home. I think, you know, the peace in the Middle East and normalization, the taking down of Iran's nuclear capabilities, the AI business deals cut with Saudi Arabia, bringing an enormous economic investment back home. What's more America first and taking out Venezuela's ships with poison headed to our shores to kill Americans? As we have sealed the land border, it's time to secure the maritime border as well.
I think so, too. Absolutely. And also it gives a message to the region. You know what? Have an election. There's no future in these brutal dictatorships. Don't let China bribe you with the Belt and Road program. That's why it paid to help Argentina through their tough economic times. It's why it paid to pay attention to Chile and Bolivia. And then now also put pressure on Colombia with that ridiculous idiot president that they have now. Lastly, just Kevin Hassett weighed in on the fiscal implications of the boarding of these ghost tankers. Cut 25.
I haven't been briefed on the latest. I did see that this is another ship that was basically operating in the black market. And so there's been a little bit of black market activity in the oil sector to go to sanctioned countries and to get them some oil. And they're getting that oil in order to avoid, you know, the reforms that we think would make the countries a better place. And so it's not a lot of oil compared to world supply. And so I don't think that people need to be worried here in the U.S. that the prices are going to go up because of these seizures of these ships. There's just a couple of them, and they were black market ships.
No doubt about it. So I think we'll see what happens. Maybe when the president makes his announcement today, he'll take some questions, at which time the Venezuela situation will come up. And I think one thing on the other channels, they don't know what to make of it because they knew Venezuela was a problem. They knew that President Biden cut a deal with Maduro to say, hey, we're going to buy your oil. Let us set up there. And in turn, just promise to have elections. So we bought their oil. The president didn't have to increase production. He drained the strategic oil reserve. At the same time, oil and gas were able to stay at a decent rate because he dealt with an evil regime and he also dealt with going into something it's only supposed to be a case of emergency. Now, this president said, no, we're done with you. We've tried negotiating with you. It's not going to happen. You lost an election by 70 points. Go. If we don't want to go, we're going to start choking you. And he's starting to choke right now. My hope is before Christmas, he is gone. What do you think? 1-866-408-7669. Real American Freestyle is the first ever unscripted pro wrestling league created by Hulk Hogan, Chad Bronstein, Israel Martinez, and Eric Bischoff to give elite wrestlers a real shot at professional career. Real American Freestyle is where Olympians, world champions, and NCAA legends come to compete, not in a cage, not in a script, but on the mat in front of fans around the world. This is real wrestling, reimagined for today. The first event kicks off August 30th in Cleveland, featuring matchups with some of the best wrestlers on the planet. You've never seen wrestling like this. Learn more at realamericanfreestyle.com.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What are the Democrats offering you in the meantime? I gotta say, ladies and gentlemen, they are not sending their best. Omar Fateh was Ilhan Omar's candidate for mayor of Mogadishu. What? I mean Minneapolis. Little Freudian slip there. The candidate for Senate in Maine for the Democrats calls me a Nazi, which is rich coming from a guy who literally has a Nazi tattoo on his chest.
Right. The New Hampshire candidate. They're not kidding. And with J.D. Vance had some fun, Trump style, with some of his opponents. And he talked about Crockett, talked about this candidate up in New Hampshire. And I don't know, Gavin Newsom, did you want a left-wing liberal with a terrible track record to be your next president? Well, that's who he thinks is going to emerge. Or it could be Kamala Harris. Griff Jenkins did a lot of the coverage live, would cut in and out of Turning Point USA's AmeriFest, and he's with us in studio now. Griff, what do you think of J.D.?
You know, I got to tell you, Brian, my favorite line from Vice President Vance was when he was talking about he would rather die a patriot than live as a coward. And he was talking about conviction. And I think that you know, the fact that you've got more than 31,000 in attendance at AmFest out there, you've got a million plus young people that are galvanizing around the legacy of Charlie Kirk. We saw over the weekend, actually, we did a story. The left is now trying to do a youth council. They're going to get people together and try and win back the young vote. But here's the problem. What are they offering young people? And that's what America Fest, Vice President Vance, as well as all the other speakers that are out there, we're talking about. They're offering an economic, a America First, a, you know, devotion to your faith, to Christianity.
I know what they're offering, not Donald Trump. So listen to Chris Christie. It's like Democrats are saying the same thing they've always said now for 12 years. Listen, cut 17.
One other thing on the Democrats is, you know, they've made the same mistake in 2016 and in 2024. Hating Donald Trump, criticizing Donald Trump is their comfort food. And they just love it. They feel good when they say it. But the American people have already twice looked at them and said, that's not enough.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If you just point to any Democrat, what do they do? Well, they're attacking Trump. I mean, that's where they're. Gavin Newsom has got traction because he's making he's going after Donald Trump. All right. What's that going to get you in 28?
Yeah, it doesn't translate to a tangible takeaway for young people. But I will say this. It's a true story. Yesterday, I'm watching NFL games at Irish Bar here across the street. And I'm talking to the bartender and his roommate who came to watch games or whatever. They're both in their mid-20s, let's say, no more than 30. And both of them are all in on Gavin Newsom. And I said, why? literally, I wanted to learn from them. And they just love that he's a fighter. They love that he's out there. I asked him about Kamala Harris, and they're like, no. She's done. But the fact that Newsom is at least out there in the arena trying to fight, they think that is who they would pick for 2028. Interesting conversation, because at the end of the day, you do have Gavin Newsom that was just taking credit, patting himself on the back for leaning into trans sports, an issue that clearly was this cultural nothing burger issue that cost Democrats in 2024. And yet Gavin Newsom, who seems to be at the front of the pack for 2028, is leaning into the same issues that cost Democrats in 2024.
So, yeah, we'll see, because he says he learns from this. But, you know, he's so amorphous. He doesn't stand for anything. You know, and now he first was he wants trans kids. His heart goes out to trans kids. Now I realize that's an unpopular position. So now he got on the border. We want to have a big heart. We want to be welcoming. We want to give everybody health insurance. Now we know that's a problem in America. And plus, he's $30 billion over budget. $30
billion. Yeah.
And now he pulled back that. And now he said, you know, we put a lot of assets at the border. You did not put assets at the border.
No.
So what do you stand for? I always knew what Donald Trump stood for. You know what Crockett stands for. You know what AOC stands for. Nothing I like, but I know what they stand. Newsom is just going to change. Remember, he's trying to be open to conservative thought. Sits down with Bannon and Charlie Kirk. But where did he learn from that? To be more right-wing, to hate right-wing more?
You know, story got buried in the Wall Street Journal, broke late yesterday, and it talks about how very quietly, for now a couple of years, you've had these immigrant, pro-immigrant advocates going out on behalf of the state of California and trying to find illegal immigrants to sign them up for Medicaid, sign them up for free health care, right? They're now quietly cutting that off. Because Newsom's like, oh, yeah, don't sign any more people up because we ran out of money. We have no money. And it's interesting to see that, you know, the issue of free health care for illegal immigrants was a great, you know, compassionate sort of position to take. And then now he's quietly trying to not let anybody know that he's stopping that because the state is running out of money.
They've run out of money, and the homelessness, we know, and the affordability thing is huge. And when you talk about the economy, I find it really interesting on the economy. I did this story today on FoxNews.com. You know, why is it that inflation goes down in certain places and others? And let's see if there's a trend line here. So here is an example. If you want to know what states are going up and what states are, and what cities are going down. So if you want to see what the consumer price index rise is, let's take a look. Detroit, up 0.7%, below the national average. Dallas, 1.1, same as Houston. Phoenix, 1.4. Well, Atlanta, 1.7. What do they have in common? Outside Detroit, which is in a purple state, everything is a red state. Now, where's it going up the highest? Philadelphia, 3.3. Los Angeles, 3.6. San Diego, 4%. Riverside, California, 4.5%. They say between the taxes and between the fees and the lack of oil and gas, where the oil and gas has been restructured and they got to import it all, that's causing these numbers to rise and the national average to go up.
Blue states, blue cities are seeing the highest increases. That's not a shocker. I do think, though, that the president and the administration needs to do a better job of being more clear about the fact that if you look at the 9% inflation rate under Biden and the just chart that is like a ski slope coming down, so now you're back to 2.7%. I think the administration needs to do a better job of telling people that because of the tax cuts that are coming, because of deregulation measures they've taken over the last 11 months, and the slow increase in wages with slowly lowering inflation rates, that is going to make for a much better 2026 than you had in 2025. And they're not – it's interesting. Kevin Hassett, I think, really has his job cut out of trying to convince his boss and those that are out as the face of the White House, the administration, needs to make it clear to people because people, you know, go Christmas shopping and they're like, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm feeling it. I don't feel like it's better for me.
Mm-hmm. But here is Kevin Hassett yesterday on Face the Nation, cut 34.
That's going to depend on what happens with Congress. Congress is going to have to send those money to those peoples. But the thing we can say is that since July, We've had a lot of positive news about the economy. We've had a couple of quarters of almost 4% growth. We've got a big government surplus, actually, running for a few months in a row. The deficit relative to last year is down by $600 billion. And so in the summer, I wasn't so sure that there was space for a check like that. But now I'm pretty sure that there is. And so I would expect that in the new year, the president will bring forth a proposal to Congress.
And he's talking about maybe everyone getting $2,000 checks.
Yeah.
He said Congress is going to have to approve that.
Yeah. I mean, look, at the end of the day, when the administration says that they're bringing in hundreds of billions in investment through tariffs, that isn't – people don't see that. They don't feel that. However, if you can make the case to explain to people that private industry investment leads to higher wages and that will translate to your pocket, that's the argument that needs to be made. And people don't – the administration's not doing a strong enough job of explaining why private investment – is going to ultimately affect your wallet. Now, you can send people $2,000 checks, great, or those warrior dividend that apparently the president's going to do for military guys. That's great. But at the end of the day, I want to know, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years from now, how I'm going to be financially, not a one-time check.
So here's the thing. I'm not sure that, you know, I'm for aggressive immigration. There's a report today that they're going to be record numbers because the administration's going to amp up the intensity with the new money on getting illegals that are here. But to me, there's certain that's really some of it is so aggressive against people that are not have not committed a crime. It's kind of going against them. Frank Luntz was on with me on One Nation last night. This is what he said about the Latino vote. Cut 20.
Latino men, for the first time in modern times, voted for the Republican. They preferred Trump over Harris, and his ability to attract younger men, his ability to attract union members who had voted their entire life for the Democrats, that was the key to his success. That was the key to winning all those swing states. And frankly, that's absolutely essential in the off year, in this midterm, because in the end, if they participate and if they stay where they are, then Republicans will keep the majority.
Do you think the Hispanic vote is in jeopardy?
Well, look, I mean, there's no doubt that when you are arresting murderers, rapists, people that have violent criminal records that are here illegally, and you go out with a targeted enforcement with ICE and arrest those individuals, it is impossible to argue that that shouldn't happen. This is federal immigration law enforcement at its best. This is why ICE exists, specifically to remove people like the truck driver in Washington State that just caused yet another deadly crash. It seems like we have one of those every week. However, you know, when you have these raids in Home Depot parking lots and you're not necessarily going after a specific criminal, then you start opening up the door to a debate over compassion. Should you be doing this? At the end of the day, the administration is taking a hard line and said, look, if you cross the border illegally and you are here, you broke the law and we're going to remove you. And we've seen 2.5 million people when Kristi Noem, DHS Secretary,
it's up to 2.5.
It's believe she said she was on with you guys. Yeah, the 600,000 plus actually deported, and then the 1.5 million removals. But it's over 2 million. Kristi Noem was on with Lawrence this morning talking about it. But you know, whether or not that is an issue that cuts against Republicans in the midterms, I guess we'll find out. But at the end of the day, federal law enforcement, I mean, you're seeing the plussing up of resources both at ICE and Border Patrol under the Big Beautiful Bill. And they've said they've needed that for years. So we'll see what they do with it.
Do you surprise with all the illegal immigrants we don't have a better soccer team? Because doesn't most of the great players outside our borders, does this surprise you?
Yeah, terribly surprising. I mean, right. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Like, can we get anybody to come through that has some skills?
You know, Maradona? Has he got any, you know, nephews?
Yeah. But yeah.
Some grandkids that they can play?
It would be great if one guy snuck in and was like, look, I can score goals.
Yeah.
Because we have the World Cup coming up.
It's right. It's going to be exciting. And I will say this, though, and that is, you know, we did see in the case of the accused killer of the MIT and Brown shootings, that was an F-1 visa from 25 years ago, right? And they got it through the lottery process. It's a luck of a draw that he ended up here. And so you wonder, Noam talked about she cut that program
off.
No
more lottery.
No more lottery. But think about it. What were we thinking from a national security standpoint that we're just going to randomly let anyone in who draws the right
number? Well, what do you think we're thinking? I know that if this is an executive order, so the next president, if it's a Democrat, comes in, they'll reverse it right away. That's why birthright citizenship should not even be a partisan issue. Should be like, well, if you're born here, but if you come here just to be born, then you become a citizen. The Chinese are flooding this area with families. They're having kids. They become American and they become spies for China. Why is that a Democrat or Republican issue? That's not in the Constitution. That's not in the Bill of Rights.
No. And you only need to look back 25 years when Democrats sang a different tune on the border. We've played so many clips of everybody, including Joe Biden, that was for, national security reasons. You don't open your border. Now, you're right. Likely the next Democrat that's in the White House is going to reverse it. But at the same time, how we arrived at a place where just because you want to come here, you have the right to do it, like it's a God-given right to just come and have a better life here. And then you take it to the extreme with the guy, Neves Valente, that is the killer in the Brown and MIT thing. So we gave you literally a free lottery ticket. You wanted to come here, and you spent 25 years hating the country. And right. We don't know the motive, but it's clear that he was had become disgruntled against the country that gave him the greatest opportunity to live in the greatest country in the world.
Hey, Griff, what else are you going to be doing today?
We are going to do Big Money Show on FBN. Good stuff. That's coming up at noon. And then filling in for some Fox and Friends this week while people are
really?
Off.
Do you want to name
Christmas.
Names? You want to name names?
It's going to be me, Santa Claus. We might have some reindeer. I don't know. We may talk football. We may talk soccer. You never know.
Well, talk soccer, you better call me.
That's right.
Because I don't think you should be talking safely about soccer, Griff.
No.
I don't want you to lose credibility. All right. So, Griff, thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Watch Griff all over the channel. And, of course, Fox and Friends Weekend. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We continue to see polls that show that people actually give the Democrats a lower approval rating on the handling of the economy, a lower overall approval rating. What's going on?
Because they have not yet come forward with an agenda about what upon which they want to govern. And they need to do that in this coming year.
That's
you got to raise the minimum wage. You got to expand health care. You got to take on corruption, ban congressional stock trading. You got to take on this issue of artificial intelligence, which increasingly is generating concern amongst Americans. You can't merely rest on Trump is unpopular and on the alternative. And that this year, I hope, and I hope any Democrats listening, got to start coming forward with an agenda upon which to campaign. That'll do a hell of a lot for them.
Yes. And that is Faiz Shakur, who's a senior advisor to Senator Bernie Sanders. Obviously, I don't agree with what he said, and I don't think anything that he said would work, but that's an agenda. So if I'm debating a Democrat, I know exactly where they stand. If that was the advisor to a Democrat. But right now, all you hear from Hakeem Jeffries is the president has not made the country affordable. Okay. What are you going to do? No, the sun doesn't matter what we're going to do. We're not in power. What they're going to do? Well, do you want to vote, or you just not just want to vote for Trump? because they have a plan. I'm looking at their plan. I'm going to decide whether it's ever going to bear fruit, or it will, or it is. At the same time, what's your plan? Because we already know it gave us a $6 trillion in spending, rocketed inflation by 9%. And now you're the American public is complaining at 2.1%, 2.7%. But now the core inflation is down to 1.6%. What does that mean? It means it's going in the right direction, but it hasn't cut into the 9% that Joe Biden gave us and denied doing it. He says it's going to be transitory. And their Treasury Secretary said, yeah, I never should have said that. Who was once Janet Yellen, the Fed chair. And now in retrospect, they came out over the weekend and said, in retrospect, now that we see these numbers, we probably should have cut rates earlier. Why does that matter? You know, the credit card rate that you have? That's because rates weren't cut. Why did the rates go up? To control inflation. Who forced inflation up? The policies of Joe Biden to the tune of $6 trillion. It devalued what the dollar is worth, rocketing up inflation without wages. Therefore, people are feeling the stress. Trump gets the keys, and they said, what happened? Well, Trump promised instant gratification, but he got instant change. But now it's got to take a while to work its way down to the American people, to the cul-de-sac near you.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. We're heard around the country, around the world. This place is bustling. Of course, New York. Well, one week we'll have New Year's Eve here and everyone will be focused. But they're really flooding here now. We got our Christmas tree at 1211. You got the Rockefeller Plaza Christmas tree, the skating rink. And you also have crime. And it's probably going to get worse because we have a terrible mayor coming in who announced on January 1st he's going to have a big outdoor party in the Canyon of Heroes. Nothing better than the January party in the street. By the way, just so you know, Lee Zeldin is coming up, one of the stars of the Trump administration, bottom of the hour. As you know, he was 6 points becoming the next governor of New York. And there's news on that front, too. For Bruce Blakeman, it looks like he's got a solo shot unless Mike Lawler just tries to jump back in, because Elise Stefanik stunned many by saying, I don't want to vibe for the Republican nomination. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Inflation was 3.7% when we took office. Now it's 1.4%. But inflation has dropped precipitously under President Trump. So I'm not sure that there's a story to explain with tariffs.
Yes, Kevin Hastin, a very good spokesperson for the economy. It'll make or break Republicans' fortunes in 26 and 28. We'll talk about how you're feeling about the economy and what you're hoping, because Trump's got a plan.
Number two.
We obliterated their nuclear facilities, but we did not obliterate their desire to have a bomb. Had they tried to open up enrichment in other areas? I think they may have. Are they trying to rebuild their ballistic missile force to overwhelm the Iron Dome? I believe they are.
The conflicts facing Trump. You got Iran, Venezuela, Russia, Ukraine, grinding peace deal taking place in Miami over the weekend. How Trump plans on taking them all on.
Number one.
We're going to ensure that President Trump has Congress for all 4 years. We are going to get my husband's friend, J.D. Vance, elected for 48 in the most resounding way possible.
Wow, that's big news. Turning Point America Fest is many ways a preview of 26 and 28. We're going to bring you the latest from the next generation of Republicans and the divide on the right and left. And you saw J.D. Vance was really effective as a closeout speaker, very comfortable with his copy, with his conversation, with his delivery. He had 30,000 people there all wanting to see him as the headliner. No doubt about it. He was comfortable taking on issues, too. Also talking about the friction on the right. You had Ben Shapiro going at Steve Bannon and others and saying, I'm pro-Israel. I'm anti-Russia. And for some reason, that's controversial now in the Republican Party. So here's J.D. Vance, Cut 5.
And you know what else unites them? We are going to kick their ass next November and every year after that. Part of the American dream is the idea that we're all, every single one of us, on the same team.
Yep, but they're not on the same team at Turning Point. I don't think they're upset by it. I think it's it's a problem if you talk about foreign policy, how many people should be in Syria, 500 or 50 or 5,000. If you want to say, you know, I'm not comfortable with Venezuela, I understand it. But to be on Russia's side, I don't get it. To not be on Israel's side, I never understand it. Here's more from J.D., Cut 7.
I remember I was consumed by this fear that Charlie's death wouldn't just deprive a family of their husband or of a good father, but that it would deny our movement of a great unifier of people and a great doer of great deeds.
So he says his whole death is consumed if he's having trouble sleeping because they were friends. And the way I found out about it, and Charlie Kirk evidently was one of the first to say, J.D., you're showing indications you're a Republican. And then he got him on board. He said, I'm thinking about running for Senate. Charlie would meet with J.D. Vance early and talk about a way forward. And he was in 2 or 3%, but he ended up winning a very hard-fought primary and then beating, winning the general, becoming a senator. Next thing you know, he's vice president. Had a lot to do with Charlie Kirk. And you know what? I think J.D. Vance thoroughly knows that. So I think that he came out there knowing that Erica Kirk said, you're next. And that has a lot to do. We have 30,000 people of the next generation of Republicans, and the person in charge says, J.D., you're next. We're going to get you elected. I think that means a lot. But there were also he also walked into a conference that had a lot of infighting. Cut one.
Now, the Democrats are always already talking about 2028, and it looks like they're going to nominate a California liberal who's presided. A California liberal who's presided over rolling blackouts, open borders, and unchecked violent gangs. They're just trying to settle on whether it's going to be Gavin Newsom or Kamala Harris.
So he also did an interview with this in a speech. He also did an interview with this publication called Unheard Interview, Unheard. And even though he did it before the speech, it came out after the speech. At which time he was asked about Nick Fuentes, who loves Hitler, loves Stalin, who bashed his wife. He came out and said, they, meaning Jen Psaki too, who bashed his wife, they can eat blank. That was Vance's response to Jen Psaki and Fuentes. He says, quote, let me be clear. Anyone who attacks my wife, whether their name is Jen Psaki or Nick Fuentes, can eat blank. That's my official policy as vice president. Vance's response comes after Fuentes bashed him for being a race traitor for marrying a wife. Usha Vance, in case you don't know, is of India heritage. She was born in San Diego to two Hindu Indian Americans. That seems to be a problem with a person who supports Donald Trump. Fuentes also told Piers Morgan earlier this month that he believes Adolf Hitler was really blanking cool. What do I say to that? What do you say to that? Yeah, you wouldn't get me interviewing them. I wouldn't give them the time of day. Except for he's got 5 million followers, and there's many people that appeared at that Turning Point USA AmeriFest who like him. And I don't get it. So the one person who stole the show, and I'll move on, we have other things to talk about, is Nicki Minaj. Why? She's a rapper from the streets of New York City who made it on her own and decided that after she saw the abuse of Christians in Nigeria, nobody paying attention to it, until President Trump stepped up and stepped out. You could say that Laura Ingraham was one of the first, and then he ends up having a policy for it and trying to get these kidnapped victims back. When Ambassador Michael Waltz heard about it, he reached to his office, reached out to Nicki Minaj, and she came and did an appearance at the United Nations, at which time then I thought, well, that's interesting. She'll probably vote for Trump. I did not know she was showing up in Phoenix. Listen to her talk about why she likes Trump and Vance. Cut 11.
This administration is full of people with heart and soul, and they make me proud of them. Our vice president, he makes me, well, I love both of them, but they're both powerful men, smart, strong, all of that.
So it looks, she came out, it was extremely impressive. She's voting for them. So my question is, if the rap community, and you talk about urban areas, which are known, females especially, to vote Democrat regardless, and the president did make gains with black males, can you imagine if 50 Cent, who is in constant contact, pretty consistent contact with the administration, Imagine Ice Cube came out and said things about President Trump in 2020 that were positive. He got ripped in his own community, so he kind of doesn't say anything anymore. I don't know where he stands. But wouldn't it be interesting if the others just came out and spoke out? Like Snoop Dogg has always been friends with Donald Trump. He's mainstream, original rapper from the 80s and 90s. As you know, he's hosting talk shows, game shows, appears everywhere. And one of his friends, the president, got out of prison, gave him a pardon. Why not come out and support him? And if I'm anybody in the communications team with the White House, I'm approaching it because it matters. It'll make people think twice before they knee-jerk have a re-election or agree with something that somebody else describes Donald Trump of doing. So Democrats are just beating up on Trump. They say he's too old. They say his scattershot speeches are scattershot. They've always been scattershot. His energy is through the roof. Yes, when you have 4 hours sleep and you sit down for 2 hours, you will nod off at any age. I have my hand up. That happens to me, which is why I rarely sit down, except for now on a Monday on the radio show. Most of the time I'm standing up. Why? Because I usually sleep 4 hours a day. I sit down and I decompress. I don't want that. So they're just going to continue to attack Trump. Nicki Minaj comes out. I guess they're going to attack her. She says she's gotten attacked a lot since. Here's Chris Christie, Cut 17.
One other thing on the Democrats is, you know, they've made the same mistake in 2016 and in 2024. Hating Donald Trump, criticizing Donald Trump is their comfort food. And they just love it. They feel good when they say it. But the American people have already twice looked at them and said, that's not enough.
Yeah, I would think, especially since he's not going to run again. Meanwhile, D.C. Democrats are irked by a surge of left-wing challengers with the in the House. They're rising up. Remember, David Hogg wanted to do that, and he got pushed out for doing that. Now, California Congressman Juan Vargas, quote, the problem is they're attacking their own. It's like attack the other guys. We'll be spending our energy and money fighting amongst ourselves. And it's really dumb. The problem is, this is not a younger Democrat against an older Democrat, he or she. This is about a socialist Democrat, the Bernie Sanders wing, the one that won as mayor-elect in New York City. That's who's fighting it out. Forget, let alone age. House Majority Leader Hakeem Jeffries was asked about it. He says primaries are a way of life in the House. Our members are going to have to fight hard, make their case to voters, and come back to office. Believe me, he cannot be happy. Though already being outraised big time by the Republicans, now they're going to have to put a lot of money into this. Meanwhile, the other story that happened over the weekend on Friday is that Donald Trump made it official. He endorsed Nassau County Long Island executive Bruce Blakeman for the New York gubernatorial nomination to take on Governor Hochul. Why? Because it looks like Elise Stefanik was fed up with the fact that the president didn't come out and just endorse her and tell Bruce to step aside. He said, I like both these guys. So Mike Lawler might drop in now because Elise Stefanik told him to drop out, and the president met with Mike Lawler and told him to drop out, but he wouldn't do it with Bruce Blakeman. Why is that? Because I think that he really likes Bruce Blakeman. Could he have stepped in? Maybe. I don't know, but they're like legitimately peers and friends who have known each other for 20 years. That's the problem. For a while, Bruce Blakeman is somebody who was married to Paul McCartney's current wife. Bruce Blakeman has run for office in this area, successful business person, and then he's a two-time Nassau County executive in a Democratic region. So he thought, maybe this guy can win. So we'll see. That's happened locally. I'm stunned because Elise Stefanik not only says she won't run for governor, she says she's not running for re-election. That could be a tough area to retain. I'm telling you, it might very well be tough. 1-866-408-7669. All right, I'll come back, read some of your emails. A lot of people wrote me about the Sunday show, the One Nation show, about this segment I did on sports and why parents can't afford it. Your kid's good, wants to be on a travel team, $1,000. Another $1,000 for personal trainers. Then you got to go stay in a hotel. You got to go to a tournament over in Arizona or over in New Jersey. I was paying for that. What am I giving up? Do I have to leave work to do that? Well, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. There's really no more rec leagues. Everything's travel. So a lot of people wrote back and said this has got to change. That's why Congress brought it up. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Where big stories meet bigger conversations. Stay informed and energized with the Brian Kilmeade Show. fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. 1-866-408-7669. So I got these emails over the weekend. And basically, with Craig Carton, who's a WFAN drive time host, who's also a big time coach, who thought would be the perfect guest, he does not think it's a big deal how much sports costs families. Cut 42.
There's a cost involved with travel sports, for sure, and it's very hard for the average working family to send little Billy into the greatest, you know, travel baseball program, soccer program. There's no doubt about that. But the cost isn't the problem. We're the problem. Parents are the problem. Because when you and I grew up, our parents kicked us out of the house at 7 o'clock in the morning and said, be back in time for dinner.
Yeah.
Period, stop. And what did we do? We went to the local sandlot. I know that ages me. We went to the local field. We played pickup ball. We played sports. The problem now is that parents are letting phones parent their kids and babysit their kids. So, yes, there's a cost involved. It is prohibitive for a lot of families for travel sports. But local youth sports, non-travel sports, still affordable. Still doable, but mom and dad have to stop allowing the computer and the screens to babysit their children.
Well, a couple of things. The thing is, the recreational sports are disappearing. Almost everything's travel. Instead of being the elite, I'm on a state team. I'm top 22 of my volleyball, baseball, soccer. Now, everyone. Craig Garland writes me from Massapequa Little League. He's unbelievably successful in Massapequa. They win the state championship. As a varsity, has everything to do with the youth program. You just say, I just saw your segment on youth sports. Craig Carton is wrong. Little leagues are being impacted by the money grab travel teams. As a program, we have been sustaining our numbers at the recreational level, but most programs are bleeding out. Parents are being exploited and robbing their own sons and their neighborhood baseball experience. Meanwhile, I got another one from Hans. I don't know if I'd give his last name, but he left his company there too. I heard you speak of the rising costs and concerns associated with sports. One element I did not hear affecting these costs was that our school budgets. I serve on the Board of Education of our town in Woodstock, Connecticut for 13 years. We could not continue to fund our middle school and high school sports. We institute pay to play, passing these costs on to the family. When I was young, I never had to worry about my family needed to pay for me to play soccer in high school. It was just part of the education system. Is that your situation, too? I mean, that's what they were talking about on Congress last week. And I got another email. I don't know who this is from. It says, I'm writing to you as a former director of the Yorkville Youth Athletic Association, which was the largest youth sports program in Manhattan during my tenure. You're correct with youth sports are in state of crisis. Craig Card made valid points regarding parental behavior, but the issue gets much deeper into the real recreational killer is the unchecked expansion of travel sports. When travel teams are introduced, whether in soccer, baseball, flag football, the recreational side of the program inevitably suffers. Every parent and child feels pressured to join the travel team circuit, which leads to several devastating consequences, watered down competition, travel status loses its prestige, the loss of community coaching, parent-led coaches disappeared, and now it's professional coaches. And when you have professional coaches, you might go, good, my kid's being taught by a professional. So, okay, paying money, and guess what? Your kid's not playing even a half game. Really? All right, why am I paying money? And you know what? We've lost three in a row. I think we need a new trainer. Their trainer's better. We need a better trainer. For my money, I need better, as opposed to Mr. Johnson coaches the team. He learned from a YouTube video, he went to classes, or he played himself or herself, and now they want to coach. And guess how much it costs you? Nothing. No parent takes money. And guess what? You raise money because you have a sense of community. So you're rolling it together. So if it gets to the point where the game gets too big, they get to 13, 14, you see tactics on the other side, you bring in a trainer to help out a little bit, but it's still parent run. And if you get to the point where you're an Olympic development team and things like that, of course parents aren't going to play a role in it. But to have that free play and have the parent play, I think it's important. Now, the problem with parents, obviously you play your kid too much or you're too hard on the kid. So one or the other, it's very hard to straddle that line. Those are issues. Those are like 1980s issues. But the issues now are not those issues. A lot of it's price. And I'm bringing back to Alex Rodriguez that if this was a story with him growing up in baseball and football, he would not be able to play. Single-parent family, no money. Tim Howard, single-parent family. Best goalie America ever had. Played in the national team, another level. Played over in England. He said, if I had to pay for this money to go travel, I would have been playing another sport. Or no sports at all. I would have just gotten a job. How many other kids will never know their ability because their parents don't have money?
Talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, the EPA administrator was once congressman from Long Island and came within 6 points of being the next governor of New York, but now he's doing a great job with the president of the United States. It's Lee Zeldin. Lee, welcome back.
It's always good to be with you, Brian.
Hey, Lee, first off, somehow, I don't know if it's coincidence, but it seems like the green fever has broken. Everyone who said the world was going to end, the oceans were going to overwhelm the land, is sell your beachfront property if we have a gas-powered car. Now we have Ford giving up on the electric vehicle, more and more people deciding something else, no more subsidies. And now we're realizing even the left is having trouble running on this stuff. What happened?
Not a coincidence. And during the campaign in November of 2024, Americans voted. And they want they want an agency like EPA. They want the government to be able to strike that balance of, yes, both protecting the environment and growing the economy. They want to be able to choose both. Affordability, the economy was top of mind for a lot of people. And that timing comes with the president coming in. States like California signing on to these electric vehicle mandates that don't work, that raise the cost of vehicles, that attack consumer choice. Other states were going along with it. And then President Trump comes into office. He puts together a team that gets it. And we've been focused all throughout this past year in being able to roll back really bad regulations that were amounting into the trillions when you add everything up, when it's all told, rolling back the electric vehicle mandates, promoting consumer choice, being able to help protect jobs, increase baseload power. The list goes on. And all of a sudden, the left woke up, and it was somewhere around the spring into the summer. And they said, wait a second, you know, times have changed. We made a mistake. Now, they didn't have that epiphany in time for November of 2024. But now you're starting to see headlines over the course of the last few months where the left is saying that they lost the culture war on climate. For us, this isn't a culture war. This is about quite simply saying we want to protect the environment and grow the economy. We choose both. And lastly, I would say is that when you look overseas to places like Europe, where they have gone even further in tying their hands behind their back, we see what it is like if we continue down the road that the left wants us to go down. And Europe is struggling mightily because of it. So we not only have that reality check of the moment that we were in 2024 and 2025 and how to break out of it, but also we can see firsthand what the consequences look like, and it only gets worse.
And when you look at those states, that's what's hurting your national average when it comes to gas and oil, because you look at there's so many taxes in, for example, California. You still got $5 or $6 a gallon gas, but in New York, why is it $2.80? Or in other states, because they don't have that strict regulation and the tax on there to discourage you from getting a gas-powered car.
Well, I mean, you know, listen, New York and California have been leading the country in one of the worst categories to ever to find yourself at the top of the list, and that's out migration. I mean, it's people leaving the state permanently and not looking back because they feel like if they'll head to one of these red states, their money will go further. They'll feel freer and feel safer. It's something that you and I have spoken about on air for years, and it's only continued. I mean, the energy policies that are coming out of a place like New York, as we have discussed, they don't allow the extraction of natural gas. They haven't been approving some key pipelines. One just finally got done, but there are so many projects that haven't been advanced. They won't allow gas hookups on new construction. They set these climate targets that they know they will not hit, but will cause extreme economic pain on people who can least afford it and trying to hit them. And then, you know, of course, California, talking about bad governance on so many levels. Our agency, you know, we did a job that we are exceptionally proud of, responding to LA wildfires. We've been on top of assisting other agencies in moving water where the federal government can help. We led the way working with the State Department as well to end decades-old raw sewage that's coming across the southern border from Tijuana. We'll continue to focus on helping our Americans, regardless of whether you're from a red state, blue state, or purple state. But as far as state and local governments goes, that is the reason why the costs are higher and the out-migration, unfortunately, leaves them leading the way and with the worst category to be leading the country.
So where's nuclear fall in this? What's your focus there?
Nuclear is good. There's a groundbreaking that is taking place. I was just in Idaho Falls, Idaho, where we're breaking ground on a new nuclear project there run by Oklo. There's other nuclear, whether it's new projects or retrofits that are going on in many parts of the country. And we're seeing in many different forms of baseload power a big difference between the Trump administration and the Biden administration that preceded us. We're not under some illusion that, you know, an intermittent source of energy is a substitute for baseload power. We need more of it. And nuclear, I'll give you one perfect example. Governor Sarah Sanders in Arkansas and Entergy, which is the company that their ratepayers use in that area, partnering with Google on a data center project in West Memphis, Arkansas, that's billions of dollars. And because of Arkansas leaning into nuclear, they are able to, and you know, plenty of other factors that came together, but we cannot minimize the significance of nuclear here. The Entergy ratepayer ends up seeing an over $1 billion benefit from the data center project, where all that y'all's fear-mongering is out there as if, you know, the projects, the investments, the new manufacturing, the new technologies, that it's all going to result in hurting us. There's a way to do this, and nuclear is at the heart of it in places like Arkansas.
But Lee, how do you feel about this? If you build a data center without increasing the energy output in the state, won't the average person have an increase in their utility bills?
You have to increase baseload power massively. There was a big need for it even before, and you could say regardless of data centers, there is a need for more baseload power in this country. Now, how you do it is important, and what you're going to do with water and water reuse, whether or not you're considering, you just raised nuclear, important point. There are a lot of these projects, they want to build these small modular reactors on their site. And the way that they want to do these projects, they want to build them where it's a net benefit for the community so that they're actually putting energy out onto the grid as opposed to being, a net taking more from the ratepayer.
I want you to hear what Al Gore said in November.
How long are we going to stand by and keep turning the thermostat up so that these kinds of events get even worse? We need to adapt as well as mitigate, but we need to also be realistic. If we allow this insanity to continue using the sky as an open sewer, some things will be very difficult to adapt to. Literally insane that we're allowing this to continue.
Do you feel like you're insane for allowing this to continue?
This is how he gets paid. This is how he's earned a living for a long time. This is how the former vice president wants to build his legacy. And what's happening around him is that a lot of the people who were in his camp of thinking are now acknowledging the reality that you and I were just discussing a few minutes ago. And here's the most important part of it. The people of this country are demanding these actions. Like we live in a country where we're supposed to be listening to the concerns of the people, whether they're going to vote or it's the day after an election, and applying some basic common sense to policy, and not saying that we know best, here's our decision, live with it. But putting out our proposals for public comment, following a legal process and then, getting the input, and trying to just get it right, listening to the stakeholders, but most importantly, making sure the Americans have a voice, that has resulted in this moment where you're going to see a lot of deregulation while we also protect the environment. We're going to be very proud of it. The electric vehicle mandates are going to be gone. And no longer will there be green slush funds that are getting pushed out tens of billions of dollars through agencies like EPA to pay off left-wing former Biden and Obama officials and Democratic donors. No more self-dealing and conflicts of interest. No more unqualified recipients. No more reduced agency oversight. So that's one of the biggest threats, is the way that the money is getting cut off, but also the power that comes from it. When you sell people a particular point, you freak them out. You scare them into thinking the world is about to end in 12 years unless we dot, dot, dot. If it's believable enough, people are like, oh my gosh, do whatever you need to do to make sure that the world doesn't end in 12 years. But when you get six more years down the road, a lot of Americans realize, oh, wait a second, the world isn't about to end. So you're scaring the heck out of me to put really bad policy and put control over my life and be willing to bankrupt, you know, entire segments of the economy. Well, maybe that wasn't the right answer. Maybe there's a better way.
So Al Gore, who put out that movie, made $1 zillion. He got an Oscar for it for best documentary. None of it came true. The world's supposed to end by now. What do you say to people who notice over the weekend they wrote about how the waters melt, the ice is melting in the Arctic at a quicker pace? Does that worry you?
Well, the climate, it has always been changing. You know, like, you could go back, you know, study it, look at the last, you know, 10,000 years, look at the last million years. And there's always been these changes that have taken place. And you'll always have some kind of a data point that is going to come out from somewhere that you can use to justify, you know, trying to score the next $30 billion in, you know, climate justice grants. You know, you'll always find a data point from somewhere that can help, you know, explain your reasoning as to why we should do a Green New Deal that, forget about raising taxes on the wealthy, you could confiscate the entirety of all the wealth, all the assets of the wealthiest Americans, and still not have enough to pay for it. Those data points are going to be there. Now, what we should do is rely on sound science. Let's also be honest about what science is. And when bad assumptions can turn into facts as years pass, that's good. But you know, it's like when you have a hurricane that's a week away and you turn on the TV trying to figure out exactly, you want them to tell you exactly what the path is. You don't know exactly what the path is. They don't know exactly what the path is. So at some point in the last few years, it ended up becoming these, you know, spaghetti models, and science was being honest and saying, well, actually, it could go any of these 1,000 different directions. But, you know, there's this desire, this demand for absolute precision in the science. I want to know exactly where sea level is going to be in 2100.
Well, Lee, let me ask you, how much have left of the Inflation Reduction Act, of the green money? Have you been able to reprogram any of it?
Well, I canceled now over $29 billion worth of grants. It's money from the Inflation Reduction Act and the IIJA. We're in litigation. The last decision that came out was a favorable 2-1 decision that we won at the D.C. Circuit. That litigation is still ongoing. I canceled the $7 billion. That was $20 billion greenhouse gas reduction fund, $7 billion for the what's called Solar for All program. That was also something that I canceled. The Congress rescinded. We found examples where grants were going through four different pass-throughs in that program, where each of the pass-through entities were each collecting a 15 to 25% VIG for their cut of being a pass-through in the way that that scheme was set up. So, you know, no more waste and abuse. These grants are canceled. There's different litigation that's going on, but we haven't lost any of these cases yet.
All right, Lee, and finally, are you going to get that pipeline through New York?
I'm glad you're raising it. So you're talking about Constitution Pipeline from Williams Company? Yeah, so important. New England needs natural gas, and we also need to reduce our reliance on foreign sources. It is a project that makes so much sense to deliver natural gas from Pennsylvania into New England. New York is actually quite foolish that it's not just New York natural gas, that New York is sitting on all that natural gas, and the best is the possibility of maybe a pipeline to have it pass through. I will do whatever I can to assist the president, my colleagues in National Energy Dominance Council, and the people of New England who are desperate for it. I'll do everything in my power to help them to hopefully get this over the finish line. And, you know, for those in New York who, you know, depending on what side of the bed they wake up each day up in Albany, deciding whether or not they want to help or hinder, gosh, they need to start waking up on the right side of the bed every single day to help get this over the finish line as opposed to stopping it.
Famously, you almost you had a great run on the Republican ticket in a Democratic state and came within 6 points of Kathy Hochul. I don't know what you can answer, because you're not a politician now, but at least Stefanik not running and clearing the way for Bruce Blakeman. Can you comment on that?
Well, yeah, I got elected with Elise in 2014. We served together. She, you know, was someone who fought very hard for her constituents. She made a name for herself on many different fronts on important issues, including obviously that memorable committee hearing where she ended up taking down those presidents. I haven't spoken to her since she made her decision. I hear that family was involved as well. She has a young family, a beautiful boy, and I wish her absolutely the best of luck. And as for Bruce Blakeman, I've known him for a long time. Amazing guy from Long Island. He was very supportive when I ran for governor in 22. Experienced and sharp, and a county executive who, you know,
does a great job.
A very Democrat, you know, as you well know. I mean, that's a county that has a lot of Democrats, that's a lot of coalitions, that's a lot of bridge building, and he has great experience on all that.
Okay, so we'll see what happens. Lee Zeldin, I think you're doing a fantastic job. Just keep educating people on what's necessary to be successful. Doesn't mean you're anti-environment. It means you're trying to be practical and get through the facts and get away from the fiction and the agenda. Thanks so much, Lee.
Yes, sir.
Lee, he's the EPA administrator. He is Lee Zeldin. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Ainsley Earhart. Thank you for joining me for the 52-episode podcast series, The Life of Jesus.
A listening experience that will provide hope, comfort, and understanding of the greatest story ever told. Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Bill Maher, the famous comedian. I've known Bill since I was like 18, 19 years old. And I've never said this publicly, but that guy. I'm so tired of this little smug, cracker-ass commentary. These act like because I did a comedy festival in Saudi Arabia, I somehow betrayed my principles. Well, first of all, what did they say? They said, well, Saudi Arabia killed a journalist. And rest in peace, Jamal Khashoggi. I'm sorry that he got murdered in such a heinous fashion. But, and I'll bust, like, you know, period. And also, I mean, look, bro, Israel's killed 240 journalists.
Couple of things. Dave Chappelle should get his facts straight, but going to Saudi Arabia, I understand there's some blowback. There's going to be touch football in Saudi Arabia. You know who's playing? Gronkowski and Tom Brady. You know, there's a lot of comedians who went over there to perform. They thought it was an educational experience. I have no condemn that at all, especially when the President of the United States went over there with all the leading businessmen. I don't condemn Dave Chappelle for going over there. But most of those people that died, the journalists, were doing dual activity between the UN and between what they were representing with Al Jazeera at the same time working with Hamas.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We're moving through at a rapid rate. There's a lot going on today. We know the President of the United States got a major announcement with the Secretary of War and the Secretary of Navy. Could this have something to do with Venezuela? It's going to be coming from Mar-a-Lago as the White House moves down there. You know the President's not going to take time off, so we'll keep you up to date on that. This hour, we'll be joined by Mayor Glenn Jacobs, as well as Moab Mustafa, the executive director of the Syrian Emergency Task Force. Why is that important? Because we know the president got retribution for the killing of two American and an interpreter, two American National Guard members of Iowa and an interpreter in Syria. Now, people like Rand Paul just say, well, we shouldn't have troops there, and this, maybe you feel the same way. As long as you don't mind if ISIS comes here, as long as you don't mind of us not knowing anything that's going on there before the attacks are emanating here. You see what happened when you take your eye off the ball in Afghanistan. You see that Afghanistan is now a terror haven. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Inflation was 3.7% when we took office. Now it's 1.4%. But inflation has dropped precipitously under President Trump. So I'm not sure that there's a story to explain with tariffs.
Economy will break, or make or break Republicans. We talk about the chances of you feeling the relief you seek and the plan Trump has to make success happen.
Number two.
We obliterated their nuclear facilities, but we did not obliterate their desire to have a bomb. Have they tried to open up in Richmond and other areas? I think they may have. Are they trying to rebuild their ballistic missile force to overwhelm the Iron Dome? I believe they are.
The conflicts facing Trump as Iran, Venezuela, Russia, Ukraine grinding peace deal moves forward, although Russia said some positive things after the Miami meetings, how Trump plans on taking action on it all.
Number one.
We're going to ensure that President Trump has Congress for all 4 years. We are going to get my husband's friend, J.D. Vance, elected for 48 in the most resounding way possible.
Yep, turning point, America Fest. In many ways, a preview of 26 and 28. We bring you the latest from the next generation of Republicans and the divide on the right and the left. We know the divide on the left is no, you know what's happening. You see a lot of these older Democrats being primaried by socialists like Mamdani, like that mayor candidate that almost won over in Minnesota, Minneapolis, and the mayor that won, you know, the socialist that won over in Seattle, and the Bernie Sanders disciples that are propping up like AOC. What they're doing is they're primary Democrats. On the right, you have Ben Shapiro fighting with Steve Bannon, and you have referees like Erica Kirk, as well as J.D. Vance trying to keep the coalition all together. And we'll see if that's going to work. Because with the election so close, neither side can afford to lose 2 or 3 or 4%. And part of losing is not showing up. So, but let alone not voting for you, but one is not showing up. The other big thing before we welcome in Syria, we talk about the Syrian situation. The Iranians evidently reconstituting their nuclear program. They're also trying to reconstitute or build up again their ballistic missile program. And when they build up the ballistic missile program, they're a danger to Iran, Israel. You think they're going to, Israel work so hard? Do you think they're going to just allow that to happen? Here's Lindsey Graham on what they think Prime Minister Netanyahu will ask of President Trump when he comes to visit. Cut 31.
The Trump people administration deserves a lot of credit for getting a ceasefire. It's been 90 days now. What did I learn on this trip? That Hamas is not disarming, they're rearming. Hamas is not abandoning power, they're consolidating power. That's what the military intelligence people in Israel told me. That's what the IDF told me. That's what our own people told me. So I am all for a stabilizing force. I'm all for a border peace. But you can't have a border peace, you can't have a stabilizing force in Gaza until Hamas is disarmed.
It's so true. And here's more, cut 32.
We obliterated their nuclear facilities, but we did not obliterate their desire to have a bomb. Have they tried to open up in Richmond and other areas? I think they may have. Are they trying to rebuild their ballistic missile force to overwhelm the Iron Dome? I believe they are. Back to Hamas. The one thing I want people to understand from this program today is that there is no pathway forward to peace as long as Hamas has their arms and they intend to stay in power. They're doing both. They intend to stay in power. They're not disarming.
And does anyone doubt Israel's intelligence on this? Some people say, well, they made up the threat of Iran, which I think is comically stupid for people to say that. It's just pretending as if Iran is not the problem in the Middle East. Moaz Mustafa joins us now. Moaz, you have a prestigious position as executive director for the Syrian Emergency Task Force. Before we talk about Syria and the retribution that took place over the weekend, your thoughts about Iran and their thoughts about trying to become a law-abiding member of the family of nations?
Iran is, thanks for having me, Brian. Iran is not, first, when we speak about Iran, we speak about this supreme leader and those around him having nothing to do with democracy, having a very radical ideology that doesn't just want to target, frankly, Israel. They want to target all of the countries in the region. We've seen what they've done in Syria. It should be in the history books, the amount of babies and elderly and men and women that they killed. We've seen what it's done in Lebanon, in Yemen. You can just pick out of a hat. So what the world needs to do is help Iran, first of all, free itself and the Iranian people free themselves from this horrific, Islamic Republic, whatever you want to call the Ayatollah and those around him. And they're never going to change, right? When you're ideologically insane, right, that there's not, you can't go to rehab. There's nothing that can be done. And so we need to make sure they never have nuclear weapons. And just as importantly, they stay the hell out of all other countries until their people get their freedom and Iran comes back to the world.
They kept Assad in power, didn't they?
Oh, they did. It was their ground troops that kept Assad in power. It was Soleimani and IRGC and then Hezbollah and all their allied militias from Iraq, all Iranian-backed militias that kept Assad in power for way longer than he should have been.
So let's talk about Syria. The president promised retribution, massive bombing. They killed five ISIS members. What are you hearing?
Oh, it's been amazing. As you know, last time I was last time we spoke, I was telling you about these raids that were ongoing, and that happened day one. So, like December 13th, right? We had that horrible terrorist attack by the ISIS lone wolf. That night, in the next day, in the whole week, and every day since then, what we had is joint raids, but between the Syrian security forces and the United States military. They did at least a dozen raids, joint Syrian-American raids against ISIS across that whole desert area, including in that city, Palmyra. And then because of that, they collected so much electronics. I'm talking about computers, tablets, phones. They also killed or detained around 23 ISIS members, probably more than that. And those that didn't get killed, right away, those that were detained, were interrogated. They gave a bunch of wealth of information. That's why you saw 70 targets get hit in like one day between missiles and planes and all the amazing military power that the United States has. And we're going to see that continue.
So you were able to pick up all that because all we heard is five dead. You think we moved on the ground? It wasn't just an aerial attack?
The first 10 days, the first days before the big aerial attack, we were on the ground every day with joint forces with our Syrian partners. And the American military was able to get a wealth of information. In a matter of days, they had enough info on 70 targets where they hit weapons depots, where they hit terrorists, like the individuals themselves, and where they hit infrastructure for ISIS. That is going to continue and continue to be as ramped up as it is.
So where's the Syrian president on this?
Oh, he loves it. I mean, it's his forces that have been working every day since that terrorist attack alongside the United States military, both special and conventional forces, to make sure that we, all these raids went successfully. And then the rest is all coordinated. And so what you have both, not just the Syrian president, Sharaa, but also the government and more importantly, the people of Syria, cheering as the United States bombs and gets rid of terrorists in Syria. Under Assad, when the U.S. bombed somewhere or whatever, you had the Syrian government saying, sovereignty and this and that, while they were like a petri dish for ISIS. Today, we have an ally in Damascus.
What do you think that does for the militias in Iraq?
Well, it scares the crap out of him. If you have Damascus, which was the jewel, you know how much blood and money the Iranians, frankly, the Russians too, spent to keep Assad in power? All of that was in vain, thank God. And with President Trump's policy, Syria then reoriented to the West. So not only did he take away their crown jewel, he made it the crown jewel of the West in the Middle East and made it a key ally both against Iran And frankly, Russia, even though that's kind of more kind of behind the scenes, we need to be, you know, Syria needs to be even making sure we get that Russian base out. And against Iran, for sure. Iran is persona non grata in Syria, a country that they held and for granted for way too long.
So you got sanctions lifted. Could you tell everyone what got lifted?
Oh, yeah, the Caesar Act. This was an act that passed in 2019, bipartisan, and was signed by President Trump. It was then lifted very recently. And that's really important because one of the things in the Caesar Act was not to allow rebuilding of Syria. Now, why is that? That's because Iran and Assad and Russia were cleansing the population, doing major demographic changes. They had displaced 14 million people internally and externally. That's more than half the Syrian population. And wanted the world to pay the bill to rebuild what Assad destroyed for Iranians to be entrenched in Syria forever, to Lebanize Syria. That is no longer the case. Now Syria can rebuild when we lifted Caesar, which allows millions of refugees to come back from Europe, from the region, and those that are internally displaced in camps can go back to their homes. That means the last sanction on Syria has been lifted, and Syria today is an ally of the United States, not just against Iran, but also ISIS.
So it must be a good feeling for you. What would be the next logical step forward? I think the Abraham Accords is too big right now. I think they got other things to worry about. But what would be the next step? I don't think it's okay anymore to just control half the country. You're going to have to make offensive moves, I think Syria is, to rid the rest, correct? Where
Absolutely.
Kurds are considered allies, but you got terror activities in that area.
You're right. Number one, we want to cleanse Syria of terrorism. That's next. That's not just next. That's happening right now with President Trump's leadership and the leadership in Damascus following suit, you know, really looking at President Trump as someone that helped save their country, helped take their country out of the sphere of influence of every authoritarian, whether North Korea,
yep.
China, Russia, Iran. And today, the next thing, too, is American companies. American companies, instead of Chinese companies or Russian or whoever, should go into Syria, and we're working on that, companies like Parsons and Crane, Citibank and JP Morgan, these important banks, and rebuild Syria where American companies benefit financially and they deserve it, but also they rebuild Syria better than anywhere else. And our companies do not have corruption. We have a culture of democracy. That's what Syria needs.
All right, Mustafa, thanks. Moaz Mustafa, thanks so much. You're doing great work for your country and being a great representative here in America. Executive Director of the Syrian Emergency Task Force. Moaz, best of luck.
Thank you, brother. Thanks.
You got it. Stay safe. 1-866-408-7669. So we know the truth. Now we know, look, we were able to do double figures in terms of people detained, killed at least five terrorists in the area, ISIS terrorists. And now it's time to rid the whole area of it. It's not okay just to coexist and say, I control 2/3 of the country. I'm going to list sanctions. Until you can get the rest of the country, it might be too much of a risk for us. We'll see. Mayor Glenn Jacobs at the bottom of the hour. Don't move.
Keeping you informed, engaged, and always a step ahead. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What an amazing crowd all of you are, and I have to admit, today solves one of the great insecurities that I had. Because as I've watched Nicki Minaj come out and declare her support for the truth, for courage, and for wisdom, I've had this little nagging voice in the back of my head wondering whether she thinks I look like the J.D. Vance meme. And it turns out, and I confirmed when she walked down the steps, Nicki Minaj actually knows what I really look like. And that is the best tribute that I could possibly imagine.
I'm not sure what the meme is. Does anyone know what that meme is? Does he look like it? Is that like a cartoon of him?
It's like an AI-generated, much heavier version with eyeliner and just kind of like a caricature.
Okay. I do think it's a big deal, Nicki Minaj going in there. I don't understand this, but I think we got an idea of how J.D. Vance is going to be running. I think he's going to take out some of the cartoon characters that he's running against. You know, you see the ridiculousness of the squad, the ridiculousness of The View, and the ridiculousness of Jasmine Crockett, who is considered like royalty on the left and for talk show and for talk shows and for these network news shows. Cut three.
Jasmine Crockett. Oh, Jasmine Crockett. The record speaks for itself. She wants to be a senator, though her street girl persona is about as real as her nails. But ask yourself, what do all of these people have in common? And the unfortunate answer is they are puppets. They don't actually matter. They are cogs in a machine that wants to make you poorer, that wants to make you less powerful, and wants to make you less safe.
And that's why she's going to get crushed in Texas. But that's what the president, that's what the vice president will run against as president. You know, it's the craziness on the left, unless they nominate someone who's center left, who's going to mock them too. And on the paper, and the people always tell me in Kentucky, don't think that Governor Beshear is moderate. He's not. But Shapiro and let's just say Shapiro and Beshear are more moderate than the squad, more moderate than Bernie. How about that? I'll give you that. So they're going to have to distance themselves from the left. And I think J.D. Vance might have to make a decision, too, and distance himself from the ultra far right that hates Israel, loves Russia, doesn't think Iran's a problem. So I think that would be a bit of an issue. Here's more from J.D. Vance as he talked about the midterms. Cut five.
And you know what else unites them? We are going to kick their ass next November and every year after that. Part of the American dream is the idea that we're all, every single one of us, on the same team.
And that's just it. Can they get on the same team? Because they'll have to be united. You know everything that happens. Look at the House. Look at the Senate. I mean, three seats, 53-47, okay? And then you have, in the Senate, you have like literally four seats. And they're going back and forth. Now you got all these people resigning. Who knows what the spread's going to be? So there's 39 seats roughly up. So you can't lose one of them. And that's why when you got to be very careful when you go after, if you're unhappy with Brian Fitzpatrick or if you're unhappy with anyone in these moderate seats, Don Bacon is gone because you have a Republican in a moderate area in which they're going to be taking on the president in order to, not only do they believe that perhaps, but they also think for their own political good so they can stay in that seat so you can keep the majority. They got to be tough. Like, for example, Bruce Blakeman can't run on being MAGA. He's got to say, Donald Trump backs me, but I'm my own person. To win in New York. Of course, that'll help him on Long Island, maybe upstate New York, but he's got to get double figures, 20-something percent or 30-something percent of the New York vote. You don't do that by being with President Trump. You got to be smart about it.
His mouth to your ears. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We continue to see polls that show that people actually give the Democrats a lower approval rating on the handling of the economy, a lower overall approval rating. What's going on?
Because they have not yet come forward with an agenda about what upon which they want to govern. And they need to do that in this coming year.
That's
you got to raise the minimum wage. You got to expand health care. You got to take on corruption, ban congressional stock trading. You got to take on this issue of artificial intelligence, which increasingly is generating concern amongst Americans. You can't merely rest on Trump is unpopular and on the alternative. And that this year, I hope any Democrats listening, got to start coming forward with an agenda upon which to campaign. That'll do a hell of a lot for them.
So that's analysis from a guy that used to run Bernie Sanders' campaign, Fariz Fayez Shakir, who said, look, yeah, you want to? If America's not affordable, tell me how you're going to make it affordable. It's not enough just to say, look at Donald Trump is not making it affordable yet. So he is 100% right. I could not answer the question, what would Democrats do if they had the power to make America more affordable, except raise taxes, I guess, and spend more. Mayor Glenn Jacobs joins us now, a.k.a. WWE Hall of Famer, professional wrestler Kane, who is the treasurer now as Senator Marsha Blackburn tries to become Governor Marsha Blackburn. Mr. Mayor, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. Merry Christmas Eve, I think
yes,
today is. Yes, we're almost there.
Yeah, double Eve. First off, what do you think about? That's the first time I heard anyone break down what Democrats will do. They have to describe what you. How would you make America more affordable?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. They don't have a solution. Their solution is actually what caused a lot of this to begin with. President Trump is exactly right. Yeah, the other night when he had his address to the nation, that he inherited a mess. I mean, high taxes, high inflation, high regulation, tons of government spending, all the things that actually hurt the economy. Those are their solutions. So, you know, I think that in the end, their message is going to have to be Donald Trump is bad and this is not our fault, when so much of it is their fault. And of course, they're not going to own up to that.
And look, maybe it worked in 2020. Maybe so much better than Donald Trump, and the pandemic was his fault, which is crazy. But maybe that flu, I'm not sure.
Well, if you look at 2020, I mean, I am convinced the reason Donald Trump in 2020 did not retain the presidency was because of the economy. And I think that this might sound a little crazy, but in some places, you know, you did literally have positions of authority who were shutting down the economy. And okay, this is going to hurt Trump, and I'm not too horribly bad with that, if that makes sense. I hate to say that, but I think it's true.
Well, yeah. I mean, a couple of things. Don't you think that's a lot of the reasons why a lot of these blue states are going out of their way to bring costs down? Because they know that it's Donald Trump's going to be that's Donald Trump's affordability rating. So they're not going to say who's the governor. They're going to say who's the president.
Exactly. That's always the case. And you know, you blame the guy at the top when you look at housing affordability, and so much of housing actually has to do with local regulations, zoning codes, and those sort of things. Obviously nationwide, there is a supply and demand imbalance, but that's coming into check. But, you know, I mean, look, if I want to drive up the price of housing, I'm just going to make a lot more expensive to build housing in my area. That's something then they'll turn around and say, well, the high price of housing, and they'll blame it on the president when it's not his fault at all.
So, look, they did a story in today's on the Hill, and they said, look at the state of housing in this country because of environmental laws and strict zoning. Mm-hmm. If you look at the places that are more expensive, up 4.4% Riverside, California, up 5.6% San Diego, California over the last 12 months. Down minus 1.1% in Dallas, minus 0.1% in Houston. In Phoenix, shelter prices have declined by 0.1%. Is that a coincidence?
I don't think so. There's obviously other dynamics. In Knox County, our housing's gone way up. And the reason is because of price pressure, because we have so many people moving in, getting out of the...
You can charge more, so you do.
Well, yeah, but they're coming from these blue areas, and they're coming in, and they're just willing to pay more. We just have more competition for, you know, a supply that hasn't grown as quickly as we'd have liked it to. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to address that through our zoning regulations and our codes so that we can make it easier and less expensive to build housing. You look at what happened with the fires out in California, you know, those houses are never going to be rebuilt because it's going to take so long and be so expensive in places like Pacific Palisades to do that. So yes, the local elected officials have massive impact on things like housing prices. But again, they'll turn around and just say, oh, it's all Trump's fault.
That's what they're seeing. We'll see if that's going to resonate. So the Trump's got a bunch of programs ready to go in terms of tax breaks, no tax on tips. You know, he wants to build incentive. He wants to get the rates down. Mm-hmm. That's certainly going to help. Do you have any idea what his announcement's going to be today with the Secretary of War and the Secretary of Navy in Mar-a-Lago?
I have no idea what that's going to be. You know, when I look at what Donald Trump's done as far as the economy, you know, he's been able to cut regulations. We've seen more supply with gasoline. That's why I've seen a decrease in the price of gasoline. He's not killing all the chickens anymore, which is why egg prices. I mean, it sounds ludicrous, but that's what's happening. You know, so they've done some really, really good work. We're still spending too much. At the same time, though, the federal bureaucracy has been cut. They've you know, so many federal workers. The federal workforce is now much less than it was when he came into office. But we're still spending about $6 billion a day more than we take in. So that's a problem. But I do think things are moving in the right direction.
All right. We'll have to see, I guess. But if you look right now in this country, you see a big divide, I guess, on the right. I guess you've noticed that.
Yeah.
That you watch what's happened at Charlie Kirk's, you know, situation with his organization, and you see Steve Bannon going at Ben Shapiro, and others disagree on whether Russia's an enemy or friend, or Iran's an enemy or friend, or whether we should be in Syria. Does it worry you about the Republican Party?
Obviously, you would like to see unity all across the board. At the same time, conservatives are not sheep, and they don't just follow what's ever put in front of them. Unfortunately, our friends on the left sometimes can be. You know, you'll see them just close ranks, and this is what we all believe because we were told to believe this. Conservatives are not like that. So it's often feels like you're herding cats. But at the same time, we allow competition with ideas, and hopefully the best idea emerges. So, obviously, we like to see everybody on the same page. That may not happen all the time. I think in some cases, we just have to agree where we can and agree to disagree where we can.
All right, I want to go over to politics for a second. Chris Christie weighed in. Obviously, he's been a critic of the president, but he's right about Democrats. Cut 17.
One other thing on the Democrats is, you know, they've made the same mistake in 2016 and in 2024. Hating Donald Trump, criticizing Donald Trump is their comfort food. And they just love it. They feel good when they say it. But the American people have already twice looked at them and said, that's not enough.
Is he right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's absolutely right. It's not just enough to say, I don't like that guy. And a lot of times, they don't even talk about his policies. They're just talking about, I don't like that guy.
Right.
Meanwhile, you look at his policies, and his policies, for the most part, have proved to have been effective.
Unless
you can actually point to some things that have an impact on the quality of life for voters, you can't just say, I don't like the guy and expect that's going to win the election.
So I'm sure you saw that Erica Kirk said J.D. Vance should be the nominee. Do you feel that, Glenn Jacobs?
At this point, I don't know. You know, that's a long way away, and there's going to be a lot of things. A lot of things happen in the interim. I think, you know, Vice President Vance has done a great job. But, you know, we'll see what happens over the next 3 years as we lead up to that election.
On the left, it looks like Governor Newsom is number one. Number two is Kamala Harris. Number three is AOC. Why do you laugh?
Woo! Yeah. You talk about the anti-dream team. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. I don't think that Gavin Newsom can win anything. He can't win the swing states because we're all going to look at, not Tennessee, obviously we're not a swing state, but I think the folks in the swing states are going to look at California and say, we don't want to be like California. Kamala Harris has already proved herself to be an absolute disaster. And AOC, you know, she's capped at a certain percentage. It's just going to be far left, but I don't think that other folks are going to get on board. I think what you could see emerge is you could see much more, at least socially and economically moderate a candidate, and that would cause some issues, you know, I think for Republicans. You know, we really have to get our messaging correct as far as it pertains to the economy, especially. Right. But, you know, those three I wouldn't be too concerned about.
See, as an athlete, I always thought the back of the baseball card matters, right? Because not just the front. Hey, you look the part, you look like you can hit, but you don't hit, so I'm going to have to cut you.
Yeah.
So you look at Gavin Newsom's track record, $30 billion in
debt,
and we saw what happened at the border.
Yeah.
We saw giving illegal immigrants free health care, now he's backing out of that. We saw the homelessness situation. We see the exit from one of the finest states in the country with more to offer than almost any other. Charlemagne the God saw this in a more of a diplomatic way. This is what he said when asked to handicap the field. Cut 18.
It is about how you campaign, but it's more so about how you govern.
Yeah.
So I think that what people are going to be looking at are people's actual records. Right. Like literally. So even if you are able to cut through like a Gavin Newsom is cutting through, people are going to really look at his record because they've seen, you know, what he's done in California. And I think things like people's records are actually going to come back to haunt them, you know, when they decide to run for president.
Or help if you're good.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Governor DeSantis. He has a lot to run on.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to compare DeSantis and Newsom, they're not even the same universe. So I think Charlemagne's exactly right. I think people will look at that record, and you can have all the fancy rhetoric you want, but in the end, you still have to defend your record.
So do you think that there would be somebody center left that would get the nomination?
I don't know. I think that's their only real chance at this point. And I think that, you know, for the Democrats, I mean, I hope not as a Republican, but, you know, you think about the folks that actually still seem to have some sense, like James Carville, and that's what they all talk about. Now, whether the extreme side of the party will look at that and whether they're, you know, so concerned about alienating the far left, you know, that's a different story.
So, and by the way, Nashville is considered left, right?
Yes.
So when you go to Nashville, what are some of the reasons why Nashville has gone left? Just very heavily entertainment-oriented?
Yeah, I think so. It's, you know, your urban areas are always more liberal, obviously. At the same time, though, you know, I don't know. Like, we see this in Knoxville as well. We have a Democrat administration in the city. I don't think that the city of Knoxville, though, the voters are as far left sometimes as the representation feels like. It's just that people don't vote in the local elections. And then obviously that has an impact on who governs. But you look at it, in the city, you'll get 10 or 15% of voters voting in city elections. And then you wonder, you know, kind of why you get what you get. Well, it's because it's skewed towards the people who are super active, which tend to be folks on the left.
Are you friends with Mick Foley?
Yes.
So I'm sure you heard about what he's done. He said in this quote, "When I was concerned about WWE's close relationship with Donald Trump for several months, especially in the light of the administration's ongoing cruel and inhumane treatment of migrants and pretty much anyone who looks like a immigrant. Reading the president's incredibly cruel comments in the wake of Rob Reiner's death is the final straw for me. I no longer wish to represent a company that coddles a man so seemingly void of compassion as he marches our country towards our autocracy. Last night, I informed the WWE talent relations that I would no longer be any appearances for the company as long as he remains in office." What's your reaction?
I think Mick is wrong about a lot of things politically. That's one of
them. Did he always lean left?
Yeah. At the same time, you know, we just don't talk about politics when we see each other. The beauty of America is people have their opinions and they can express those opinions. So I would defend his ability to express his opinion. At the same time, I think his opinions are wrong.
And you're not surprised by it?
No, not at all.
Okay. What is the WWE's relationship with Trump? I didn't think there was...
I don't understand what...
I don't even
day
know
to day,
it,
like right now is, you know, back in years ago, Trump helped promote some of the first WrestleManias. He was on a WrestleMania, but he's not involved. As far as I know, he's not involved in the company right now. And here's the other thing, you know, if I'm WWE and I have a relationship with the president, that's a good thing, no matter who the president might be.
Yeah,
that's good for business.
I mean, you saw at ESPN, what's his name, who hosts the midday show? Pete, you know, right? No, not Stephen A. Smith. Who's the kicker? They post the midday show. Cannot believe I'm blanking out at it. He had the Trump on. He got a huge blowback for having Trump on. He goes, "He's president of the United States."
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the same thing if it's Joe Biden.
Yeah, exactly. The prestige of having the president is kind of a big deal, no matter who it is. So this silly blowback that you see is just—it's just ridiculous. And I think a lot of it's just virtue signaling for the Democrat base.
So tell me about Glenn's tiny home village for veterans.
Yeah, Operation Heroes Hill. We're creating a village of twenty tiny homes, as well as a community center for veterans who are having a tough time finding housing. The really unique thing about this is, our high school kids are actually building the homes with industry mentorship. So we're addressing veterans' homelessness as well as workforce and skilled trades. It's something I'm really proud of. We should be breaking ground on it here in a couple months, and hopefully we can cut the ribbon before I leave office in September.
How bad is the homeless problem among veterans?
In Knox County, across the country, probably about a quarter of the homeless population is veterans. In Knox County, that's a little less. We estimate that we have 140 homeless veterans. Helping 20 of them get housing is a step in the right direction, but there's still too many.
Right.
And no one's ever served our country should have to worry about having a decent place to live.
And where do you think the breakdown is?
It's just as within the general population, housing prices do have an impact on marginal ability to buy a home or to get shelter. But then also things like behavioral health issues, substance abuse, you know, especially a lot of these folks that might have PTSD and those sort of things. I think that's probably going to be more prevalent among your veterans population than population at large.
And you're also here to be on Gutfeld tonight with Tyrus Hosty.
Yeah.
Are you concerned he's going to be rough with you?
He's always mean to me, man. He always has those flashbacks. It should be a good time. And, you know, I'm just thrilled with all the success that he's had. I have people come up to me all the time and tell me, "Hey, say hello to Tyrus for me. I love him." I'm just really thrilled that he's been able to do all the things he's been able to do.
Mayor Glenn Jacobs, always great to see you.
Thanks.
Congratulations on your success as well.
Thank you.
Back in a moment.
The headlines, the stories behind them, and the people who make them. Only on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
a talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
Well, life is too expensive in the United States of America, and things have actually gotten worse under Donald Trump's presidency. He promised to lower costs on day one. Republicans promised to lower costs on day one. Costs aren't going down, they're going up.
Yeah, well, I'll have to see. I mean, the only thing you could say is the president's going out of his way to bring costs down. What did Joe Biden do? Yell at grocery store owners and tell them they're gouging when it turns out they got maybe margins of 1% to 2%? That wasn't the gouging. Oh, coming down on meat packers and saying you're going to sue them? That didn't really work out either. And what did you do? Spend $6 trillion. But having said that, it is true. 45% of the country says Donald Trump is responsible for this economy. I get it. Like 20% said it is Joe Biden that's responsible. I understand it. The minute you take over, and if you promise things, you go do it. I'm not making excuses for anyone. All I could tell you is I could point to a bunch of things President Trump is doing. Number one, reorganizing trade deals by using tariffs as leverage. Some just bringing in revenue. That works. But number two is it's reorganizing trade. When you up the tariffs, it makes people come to the table, like South Korea, like Japan, like the European Union. Now, the next is USMCA. If Mike can give advice to the president, you bring in that trade deal with Mexico and Canada in a favorable way. That'll help a lot of predictability for American businesses, help it grow. Those are my two cents. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Make sure you find and meet me February 14th. Get tickets to History, Liberty, and Last, briankilmeade.com.